Welcome to the Focus on Why podcast. I'm Amy Rowlandson and I ask my guests one simple question. Why? Focusing on the importance of why, I share with you the relatable, uplifting and inspiring conversations I have with people from all walks of life. This podcast will encourage you to focus on your why to enable and empower you to achieve the success you desire. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to my weekly email newsletter, Friday Focus. Each Friday, I focus on one topic with one action arising. The link to sign up is in the show notes, or head over to amyrowlandson.com and sign up right now. Today on Focus on Why, I am joined by Mark Convey. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Really stoked to be here.
Yeah, let's get going. What is it you're focusing on at the moment, Mark?
Very much my professional speaking career, which still, because it's quite fresh, seems a bit strange saying that. But I really want to share my story and approach to life and mindset to help other people understand their stories better. And the best medium for me to do that, to have the biggest impact to start with for where I am at in my career is to be a motivational speaker.
And why now?
Why now? That's a really good question. I think it's because it's gotten to the point in my life that there's no trauma left for me anymore. So I spend a lot of time needing to understand my own journey to get to a point where by doing this, first and foremost, I'm adding value to my life. And by sharing such sort of big trauma that I went through, if I was using it as a crutch or a way to still emotionally heal myself, then I think I'd be on quite unstable ground. So I needed that stability that this direction that I'm going in. Yes, I really want to help as many people as I can and reach as many people as I can, but I can't do that unless I'm helping me first and foremost.
Love that. And how long has it taken you to heal?
It took me probably 5 years to physically heal and get my independence back after being badly burned as a 14-year-old. And the type of healing that I talk about is more, rather than running away from trauma and having huge sort of psychological downsides to what happened to me, it was more about just trying to, how I describe is evening up the score with the universe. So my approach to healing for me was that I felt like I was owed some. So once I got over that 5 year initial recovery, then I was at university, and I've described this before as the start of me running into life. So rather than running away from any really, really big traumas, I had my head up and I was going to look for opportunities, and I felt like that, you know, the balance was off and I needed to restore that balance. And that took me 25 years. And as I said, it wasn't that suddenly I woke up one day and was like, oh, I don't have any trauma left in my system. I just felt like that I was got to a point where I was ready to turn around and look back and reflect on my life. And then I also had, you know, 25 years of life experience and wisdom built up. So I had the powerful, you know, recovering from trauma matched with a lot of life experience, and then felt like I'd got mine back from universe, and I'd created as many adventures and exciting and fun things within my life. And now it was a point of self-reflection and sharing, and a lot of things, the timings of a lot of things sort of came around at the same time, you know, reaching middle age and seeing that there was a need for people like me to come out and talk with the sort of collective trauma that we're going through, with all the things that are going on in, you know, in terms of cost of living crisis and the climate emergency and everything that we went through with COVID. There just seems to be all sorts of different types of traumas that people are suffering at the moment. And I felt like that I could add value to society by doing that. And in a place where it was adding value to my life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this evening up the score with the universe, I mean, what a great phrase. But what does it actually mean from your perspective?
So from my perspective, I lost a lot of things, physically, mentally. So a lot was taken away from me just because of the physical limitations, really, of being burned. And I was a very, very sporty teenager. And that was my outlet in so many ways. So I could look about what I've lost and get really down on myself. Or I thought a more positive way of dealing with this is just go out there and be a go-getter and, you know, use these characteristics that you've got. And there's still an awful lot of privilege within your life. And there is still a lot of lightness in there. And I didn't want to accept that there wasn't a bright future for me. You know, I'm competitive and stubborn. And so before my accident, that probably made me equally annoying as it did lovable. But you know, I had these character traits. I wasn't going to accept that there was a predetermined future for me that was going to limit my self-worth and my contentment and what was available to me to go out and be able to achieve. So I was like, okay, no, I've just got my life. I'm going to go live it. And yeah, so for me, it was just not like that I was keeping score that, you know, oh, well, there's 100 things I've lost and now there's 100 things I need to go and get. And it's much easier to sit here today and look back that I was consciously making all those decisions. It's now looking back that, okay, maybe that's what I was thinking. So some of them are subconscious, some of them were more conscious. But as long as I can draw the lessons and learnings from those experiences, then I've got a way to be able to hopefully communicate with other people so they can start looking at their own traumas and roadblocks in life as potentials for growth. And then the most beautiful period in life for me is when you come out of a dark mental period. I feel like you've got this sense of momentum behind you, and it's in those moments that I think is the real magic of life, you know, because you have this like wave of optimism that you didn't have before. It's like the underdog story is like coming from behind, but then you have to pay attention. You know, I think we can all be lucky or unlucky, but when we are lucky and those opportunities come along, I think you need to grab them and really make the most of them. And that's just, I love those moments in life.
And running into life, again, another expression about looking for opportunities and instead of running away from what you've lost, what is it you want to run into?
Just a sense of contentment and authenticity in terms of who I am. And it's not about looking forward too much. It's just almost as about the way you run as well, you know, holding yourself in the right way, being very self-aware, and keeping your head up for opportunities. And again, it's not like that I was running away from trauma, but it's not as if, you know, there was some faking it until I'm making it in there. And, you know, we have our egos and various personas that we can put into play at any time. And I don't think they're necessarily a bad thing in the short term. I think we use them as walls, as defense to stop people getting too close to us. So we play off these different things just to make us at ease within social, you know, environments that we feel uncomfortable or pretending that we're better than we are at something to try and get some praise from someone else. And I think that's okay in the short term. But if we don't have the right amount of self-awareness, then they dominate who we are. And I think that's a dangerous state of mind to be in the long term for our own well-being, because I think it creates a ground that where it's not very stable. And then something comes along and shakes those foundations, then everything could just come crumbling down because we have no idea about who we are. And I think a lot of people get to midlife, especially men, and that happens to them. And you look back and you just, you know, what the heck have I done with my life? And it's because you've been too long living through these personas and maybe looking for external validation. And I don't think we've helped ourselves in modern day society. You know, I think we're more consumers than we are civilians these days. And social media and 24-hour news, and it's just, there's so much out there that we, you know, that can really knock off us, of course. But if we look inwards for those answers and, you know, beyond the voice inside our head, beyond our ego, and really work on our core values, then none of that makes sense. You know, none of that, you know, you realize that doesn't help you. But again, it's a journey. You can't just flick that switch. So therefore, again, just go back to the original point. I think it's okay to have these various personas in place just until you're figuring out who you are and what your values are and how to live an authentic life.
And there's two parts to this that I want to ask about, the values, but also the story. You started off by explaining that this need for understanding stories better. So from that perspective, what are your core values and how have you understood your story better?
My core values, I used to have a few different ones, and I think they can change over your time, but I've really simplified it down to two, and they are freedom and connectivity or connections. So I'm free from any trauma associated with my accident, which I'll explain a bit about more about in a minute. But I'm also connected with what happened to me and realized that it absolutely fundamentally shaped, you know, the person I've become. And having understanding those core values and then making decisions from that point, it keeps you pointing towards your North Star. You know, I need to be free to be able to think what I am, but you know, who I am and how I see the world, but to be able to do it in a way that really helps me connect with people. So I'm not trying to make myself an island, and having that connection with people and understanding the community was massive in my recovering from, you know, being badly burned as a 14-year-old. You know, I very much, you know, I had some certain characteristics in terms of grit, determination, and things that, you know, we may assume are values, but they're not. And, you know, your values really need to be about yourself as well. But having that connection with people around me was massive to me recovering from you know, horrific injuries as a teenager. I didn't need sympathy and pity from people. What I needed was to seem to be adding value to other people's lives, to still be a valued member of, you know, community or society. And I got that in droves from the people around me. You know, I imagine if I'd been a 14-year-old with all the characteristics that I had, but then I was, say, dropped into a care home or something like that, and there's no way that I would ever have made the powerful recovery I did. There's this whole nature versus nurture thing. And, you know, some people have just said, oh, well, we just think you're, you know, one in a million, Mark, and you were just born this way. And it's just not the case at all. So I think, yeah, values can change over time. And it really took the last, you know, couple of years when I, you know, quote unquote, stopped running into life and really started to reflect and understand my values. And my values in my 20s would have been, you know, much different to now. It would have probably been much more about adventure, because at that point I was very much, as I said, running into life to get mine back. So it was anything that could lead me on incredible adventures around the world, I would follow. But I'm much more settled now. So it's, you know, I can get a connection with nature and the world and people around me without necessarily need to be as crazily adventurous as I was.
And you mentioned that you were going to share with us what happened.
Yeah. So I was on holiday with my family in the west of Ireland, which was, my parents are both Irish, so we used to do summer holidays there. And me and my cousin were playing with caps. You were put into a cap gun, and we had some matches left over and playing with them. It started raining, and we shouldn't have gone into a garage that was separate from the house. A can of petrol caught fire, created a barrier of fire in front of me. Then I got trapped in the garage. My cousin got out, was in there longer than I thought. had a crazy near-death experience, but woke up, managed to get myself out of the garage, was then taken to a local hospital where I was stabilized and then had to be taken to Dublin overnight in an ambulance. I flatlined twice on the way there, but managed to keep the heart going, or someone else helped me manage to keep the heart going. Got to Dublin. I was in an induced coma, came out of that, and they accidentally administered penicillin to me, which I'm really allergic to. So that nearly killed me. I had to go back in a coma, but then came out of that. My organs were trying to pack up on me, but we got through that. It was a pretty horrendous time in Dublin for, I think, somewhere between 9 and 11 weeks before I was well enough to get on a flight back to England, even though I was still in a really, really, really bad state. Got back to England into a world-class burns unit at Queen Mary's Hospital in Roehampton under some just pioneering surgeons. And yeah, that was probably early October. I had 3 operations in Dublin. I think by the year ended, I'd had 20 operations. So I was having 3 operations a week and all sorts of different procedures and intensive physio. And I think I had over 30 operations in total in about 2¾ years and various things. But somehow I, you know, managed to stay in my school year. I had to learn to write with my other hand, my left hand, because my right hand was so badly damaged. But I managed to scrape together 5 GCSEs to continue my education. And that was a really important point, and I bring it up because it's so important, I think, that we have goals. So we don't want to live too far in the future, and you really need to find a way to live in every day and see the magic in every day and the achievements you're making every day. But I do think you need some goals and targets in life. And for me, mentally, I knew staying in my school year, and no matter how hard that was going to be, you know, going back to school was the hardest day of my life from a mental point of view. But I had this target in mind, and it was to stay in school and get my GCSEs. And no one thought I could do it, and I proved them all wrong. So that's kind of, you know, in a nutshell, what happened to me back then.
And you mentioned, Mark, that going back to school was the hardest day of your life. In what way?
Just, yeah, you know, I went to a very sporty, all boys, you know, Catholic school. So it's very old school, traditional. There was not a lot of looking after our well-being, let's just put it that way, in the school. And 14 years old, by that point, I had been fitted 2 months earlier with a clear perspex mask. So I had to wear that 24 hours a day for 2 years. So as if I wasn't scary enough looking already, put a plastic mask over my face, you know, you become a lot scarier, and it's a lot harder to show your emotions as well. So your eyes become important. So going back and then being dropped into school amongst your peers, and then another 800 students, you know, my classmates and another 800 students was really, really, really tough. But I got over it, you know, and I got over it quite quickly. And that was a massive lesson in life. And one of the reasons I got over it so quickly, I was just, and this happened to me with a lot of things around that time, that I had the most extreme versions of things that you can imagine in terms of, you know, dealing with pain, anxiety, not so much depression really, but such extreme emotional states. But at a time where, you know, I was in the middle of puberty, so I was in a, you know, so in one way, horrific thing, this happened to me at 14, but in another way, my brain was developing probably quicker than it had done from when I was, you know, a toddler. So I was able to create all these new neural pathways. So I happened upon just being able to process emotional states really quickly. And I'd already had, you know, set precedents in my recovery even before that point, in terms of not looking too far ahead and not worrying so much and realize that you can find ways around it. So even though that was horrible on that day, I was then able to process it very quickly and realized I was untouchable at school as well. You know, if anyone came in anywhere near me, you know, they were going to get expelled. And I played on that, you know. It was brilliant. People who were bullying me the year before, I could just completely take the mick out of them, and there's nothing they could do with it about it. So I just used this power and this weird sense of celebrity that I had and untouchableness just to, again, it was probably a persona thing, right? But it just, until I kind of processed it, it got me through that point. And I lived through this character, and then it didn't stay around for long. And then more of my true self, you know, was coming to the surface.
You mentioned that true self in earlier when you were talking about authenticity.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit more about what that means.
It's just being really content with who you are. You know, I've made best friends with the voice inside my head, and that's a lovely, lovely place to be in. You know, it's really, really peaceful. But I think you need to do the work to get there. So again, it's like really understanding what makes you tick, what are your values, what gives you that fuzzy feeling inside when, you know, you do something and people react really well off it. You know, it's that kind of self-awareness, but about who you are, but then understanding how you interact with people around you. You know, as I said, I started to realize that I could have an extremely impactful, positive influence on people's lives very early on after my accident, in terms of being a good patient. And if I could make people feel better about the job that they were doing with me, suddenly they gave me more back, and you create this really positive cycle and you get this great, great feeling inside. But you know, life throws a lot at you, and it's easy to lose sense of who you are at different stages. But yeah, like understanding your core values is, for me, just grounds me and enables me to make decisions without too much external noise going on. And then you really start to, I think, give off a very different energy. I think if you're living too much in your ego's too much in play and you've got various personas, I think your ego is, your energy is very much up in your headspace. And some can almost come along and push you over. I think if you then try to get a bit too defensive in terms of people trying to give you advice, and you put all these barriers up, and the ego is still in play, but it's for want of a better word, a more kind of masculine energy that you keep like within your middle, and you're resistant to things, and it's just that's going to give at some point. But I think if you can just really understand your core values, then suddenly your energy is grounded. It's down within your feet, and you feel more rooted to the earth and who you are. And it's not about being selfish or overly self-centered. It's just, why would you want to compromise on exactly who you are? But then the next stage is that, well, how does that work in a social context and in an environment? You know, I'm not going to, you know, I had a conversation about this with a friend of mine recently, but he was saying, oh, well, what if someone decides that their true value is to go out and do their business in the middle of a high street? You know, are you going to stop them doing that? But that's, you need that self-awareness, right? It's, you need to know that how we live in a society, and you need to make sure that you can blend within that. And if you're not, then suddenly it's your ego back in play, and you know that you're not really getting to the, because your values have to be also in the context of how you live with other people, I think, as well.
And in terms of this career, which you said is quite fresh, what is it that you would like to see achieved from the perspective of the message that you would like to share?
I'd like people just to have a greater understanding on what they need to look on the inside, and then what they need to get from other people. So it's internal versus, you know, external validation, an inside out way of thinking rather than an outside in way of thinking. And if we try to look for our well-being, you know, on social media from other people, or compliments, or all these, you know, different things, or if we're having a hard time and we feel like we constantly need someone's arms around us, you know, those things should just be nice to have. And I'm fearful that if you open up that roadway to needing validation from other people, whether it be your friends, your family, your social media, what you see in the world, I don't think you can make that a one-way street. I think it's a two-way street. So then there's traffic going to come back the other way, and you're going to expose yourself. And that's why people, when they, you know, they attach their well-being to having, you know, likes on social media posts, it's that same highway is why they get so impacted by negative thoughts that are comments that come back their way as well. And it really, really, it's hard to keep that in balance. So you need to protect yourself from that, find external validation, you know, be more, by being resilient, you need to be stricter on yourself, but then much more forgiving on other people. You know, I was in recently did a talk, and the culture that they want to do is to build in a resilience for each individual employee, but then for them to kill other people with kindness. So yeah, so it's about what we can give to other people, but then what we need to rely on for ourselves. And I think we can create a much happier society by doing that.
And in terms of purpose, how does that fit into your present and your future?
Yeah, I think, I mean, wouldn't we always want to be purposeful? I just, yeah, you know, that's why I think it's taken me this long to be able to share this, because, you know, I wanted to get to a place where that it was in balance, that it was giving me a great sense of purpose, but also, you know, I was adding value to society. So I wouldn't want to be in a position where my purpose in any way was still making me ill. Otherwise, I don't think I'd be living a purpose-led life. I think purpose has to start with, again, with yourself, but in the right context. And then you can feel your purpose. It's such a loaded word, and it's tricky to really understand all the time, I think, what one's purpose is. And because we don't want to, again, look too far ahead. And sometimes, you know, people think that their purpose is something that they need to be aiming for, rather than living more within the moment.
How do you interpret it?
I think it needs to be more within the moment. So I think I feel really, really purposeful if I know that what I'm doing is really in balance between having an impact on my life and having a positive impact on society. So if they're working in unison together and pulling in the right direction, then I feel like I'm living a purposeful life.
And I've heard throughout this conversation so far, Mark, I mean, incredible different emotions and, as you described them, characteristics. And there's been this through line of contentment, authenticity, patience, positivity, grit, determination, freedom, and connectivity, and a huge self-awareness. But this has been a journey, I feel, as opposed to an overnight transition.
100%. Yeah, and it continues to be. You know, we could have this conversation in 6 months' time, and I might have, you know, evolved to a point where I'm thinking slightly differently, and that's absolutely okay. You know, And that's why where that sense of freedom comes in. You know, I want the freedom to be able to evolve. And even I could turn up tomorrow and I'm a new person turning up, and that's okay. You know, it's okay to continue to evolve. And I think, if, you know, I'm just trying to be a better person today and a better person for me and for people around me every single day. And if I stop, then that's probably when, you know, my time is up on this earth. You know, I love the journey. And it, again, it's cliche, it's not about the destination, it is about the journey. And if we always think that we're trying to get somewhere, then we're always going to be disappointed. So you need to embrace that living in the moment, and the journey is part of it, but it doesn't mean that you can't have opinions along the way and they can evolve. And I just think, yeah, self-awareness is massive. And I was made to feel unbelievably self-aware. So that suddenly when you know, your hands and your face are burned and you're the person that everyone's always looking at, that sense of self-awareness. So it's like, wow, I need to, my well-being doesn't need to be via you and what you're thinking. I need to be able to shut you out and find out inside of me what makes me tick. And then whatever you lot think, it doesn't matter. So that's where that extreme learning of, you know, that first day going back to school was like, well, my well-being can't be about what 800 of you boys think about me. It needs to be in here. And that's where I'm going to build from. But yeah, it took a long time, I think, to really allow that to fully come to the fore. You know, again, it will keep evolving. And that's probably, you know, why it took me 30 years to get to that point. And that's okay. It could have taken me 5 years. It could have taken me 10 years, but I'm not here to compare myself to anyone else. All I have is my story. I can't live anyone else's story. But I can learn as much as I can from my story by being self-aware, but also being free from it weighing me down. But also the learnings help me connect greater with myself and other people in my environment and the earth and environment and all those things.
Yeah. And it's incredible that you're now using the platform of speaking to share your story, and with the intention of helping other people to understand more about themselves, to understand more about possibilities, to understand more about, as you said, you know, what are they going to do with their life? And in terms of you made the distinction between being very wrapped up into being a consumer than being a civilian. And we can forget that we are taking so much instead of giving to the environment that we are a part of.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's really impacting the way I'm starting to live my life even more recently, in terms of just becoming much more minimalist. And I'm thinking so much more about, if I buy something, is it really going to add value to my life? And it's even more freeing. And, you know, I was sat in my apartment a couple of years ago, and I was on, you know, 2-bed apartment on my own, wraparound balcony, filled it with really nice furniture. And I'm looking around, I'm thinking, I don't give a damn about any of this stuff. You know, when was I most content? It was like when I was just had a backpack on my round, a backpack, you know, on me going around Southeast Asia with no mobile phone or anything. And just, that's when I was most content. And then I'm thinking, I'm burying myself trying to run this creative video and agency just to pay for these things. And it's like, this isn't you. What are you doing? So like the last 2 years, I've just been shedding as many possessions as I can that I don't need. And, you know, I bought a camper van and I've gone on 3 trips around Europe this year. And it's just, that's what makes me feel alive. It's like dialing down the noise of everyday life has been really, really huge for me. And we don't realize just how our stressed hormones are always just on a bit in modern day life, with the phones in our pocket, with 24-hour news, with just, we have to fill every moment of every life, and just getting away has just been incredible for me. But yeah, it's just, I think we are consumers in so many ways. And I think that also goes for our mental health, and not about just the things that we buy. I also think that, and I'm getting much more interested in this, I can maybe see, you know, my career going closer and niching down more towards this way, but I'm, you know, I'm not looking too ahead, but it's an option going forward. And that's around how our approach to our mental health and well-being is, for me, far too homogenous and a tick box exercise, where it needs to be so subjective, like really subjective. We need to really dig deep on who a person is. So say they've gone through some sort of trauma, you know, where they've come from, what their upbringing is, what their education is, what the culture is, what was the culture of their of their family history going back through generations, because so many of these things get handed down from generation to generation. And I just don't believe in a 25 tick box exercise to determine whether or not someone's got PTSD or not. And I feel like the quicker we diagnose people, the quicker we can treat people. And we don't always treat people in the best way. You know, if we go too quick down the medication route and we don't understand. And yeah, so I really worry that we're going much, much further down this globalization of our mental health and our well-being, and turning patients into consumers. And I just think that's dangerous. That's why I'm a huge fan of the NHS and keeping healthcare as free as possible for as long as possible.
Yeah, I hear you. And I really do echo your thought about how people are filling in the moments and that they become just constantly busy for the sake of being busy. And the distinction I make is instead of filling in the moments, it's creating fulfilling moments. And it sounds like that's what you've been doing in the recent months with your trip around in the camper van. So I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly how, nailed it.
Yeah, I love it. Mark, thank you so much for sharing why you do what you do and your focus on why. How could people reach out and connect with you? What's the best way for them to do that?
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed this conversation. The best way for me is LinkedIn. Just connect with me on LinkedIn. I find that really, of all the social media platforms at the moment, the safest place for one to be their authentic self. So I do have some stuff on. You can get hold of me on LinkedIn. On Instagram as well, which is the_conv, CONV. But LinkedIn is the place where I'll be most active and get involved in discussions.
Perfect. Well, I'll make sure the link goes into the show notes because it is Mark with a C. So I'm sure that gets done. Mark, again, thank you. It really is a privilege to have you on Focus on Why. Have you got some final words, please, for the listeners?
Yeah, the final words I've got for the listeners are, you know, and I want to give this a bit of context. So this might sound a bit dark and morbid to start with, but it's not. And I want to sort of just go back to a point I made and just have it stand alone at the end. And it's pain and trauma and suffering are just a part of life. And that's okay. It really is. And if you can to work on yourself and work on your resilience, but stay compassionate to yourself first and foremost, it's then the windows after you come out of those dark periods where life is just magic. And it's in those moments that, you know, I encourage you to just grab the reins of life and go for it. It's you need to be able to, as Viktor Frankl said, and I'll give a book recommendation in a second, is it's about justifying your traumas in life. So trauma is going to happen to all of us, some big T, some little T, some in between. But just go for life in between those moments, because it's up to you and no one else.
Brilliant. And the book reference
is Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. He's the godfather of logotherapy. And he had all his thinking and papers written, and then they got taken off him when he unfortunately was taken into a few different concentration camps. But he got a new sense of meaning by going through that experience. And thankfully for all of us, managed to survive. And then his book is just, yeah, it just resonates with me more than any other book. So, and it's uplifting. It doesn't go too dark into any of the details, because there's plenty of other books out there in terms of what happens in those camps. But yeah, go and read it. It's incredible.
How has this conversation had an impact on you? What value have you received from tuning in? What are your reflections with actions? Please take a moment to leave me an Apple Podcast or Spotify review sharing how Focus on Why has made a difference to you today. Remember, the conversation doesn't end here. To keep it going, simply connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook or Twitter, or join the Focus on Why Facebook group. All the links are in the show notes. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why.